In this world of nonstop news, it's important local journalists cut through the noise so you know what really matters. Hi, everyone. I'm Phil Lipoff.
And I'm Shannon Mallaire. In our community in Boston, you are the driving force behind our stories every night.
Our investigators team is constantly creating change that impacts all of us.
And NBC 10 Response Leslie Gatiss is ready to fight for your retail rights.
Plus experience and accuracy, Pete Bouchard brings you the forecast like no one else.
It's your news, and we're here to tell it. NBC 10 Boston, weeknights at 6, 7, and 11.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, from the People's Republic of Minnesota, this is Closet Objectivists in the Closet Objectivists. I am Corey Baum, and I am back, so I'm going to go ahead and give myself a little bit of cheers. I had to take a mental health break, and not that this show gives me mental anxiety or anything like that, but I just need to take a day to recharge my batteries, so... Megan is on the line with me, and I am back and ready to go for an episode we do together. So we are here.
Welcome back, Corey. Yeah, I mean, you've been working so hard on this podcast. I think it's helpful to press the refresh button every once in a while.
I was actually thinking, you had mentioned about in the episode that you did was the Valentine's Day episode. And I thought, well, why don't we do two that week? But then it's like, it's hard enough for me to find content for one show, let alone two. And I know that you were going to be taking over the Valentine's Day. That was all your, and by the way, great show. It was awesome. And it was very sweet and yeah, learned a lot.
I'm glad you like it.
And I think that there was a lot of people that listened to it, as usual. So thank you again to the people that do listen to us. A lot of it, again, is on the replay. And even if you were listening live last week, it was on a pre-record. So, but yeah, good job by you.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, no, I was very, very happy to do it. it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I think it was well received and that kind of thing. So, yeah, so it's great to be back and recharged, and I thought let's do a little more of a, I don't know, maybe not so deep episode, maybe. I like entertainment. I've been thinking, I was like, what kind of shows people have been watching. And I was like, I'm just interested, every once in a while revisiting some of the things we're reading, watching, listening to, or looking at as far as art and that kind of thing goes, artwork itself, that kind of thing. So, so that's kind of what we're going to be doing here. I came up with a headline, my news headline.
All right, let's hear your fake news headline, what you wish was true.
Right. So can you got to bear with me a little, okay? Can you believe that the media is still going on about how Trump was talking about In the Closet Objectivist podcast for 80 minutes? It was unbelievable.
I thought it would never end. It was great. It was good. It's going to be huge.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm going to say hi to the chat. There's a person in the chat. Hello, Michael. Welcome. Thank you for taking a moment to check out our show. Meg, you have your headline ready to go, queued up.
Oh man, I draw a complete blank. Even if I've like adequately prepared. When it comes right down to it, I draw a complete blank. Let's see. So I think this my fake news headline this time is that several politicians, among them Barbara Boxer, has decided that they've never produced a damn thing in their life and that they should retire from politics and, you know, maybe start small, like, I don't know, like working in fast food, but, you know, do something that actually creates wealth instead of destroying it.
I think that Barbara Boxer should actually become a boxer and get her ass kicked. I think maybe Layla Ali or somebody along those lines can do something for to help us out with that. That's a perfect name, too, because when I watched the Alex Epstein talk in the conference in front of the Senate, talk or whatever, about the environment, about the, you know, the this happened about a year ago or whatever, but Barbara Boxer was just grilling him, right? And I'm like, you know, way to knock that boxer out. You really TKO her.
Yeah, and like the rest of the Senate hearing, everyone was terrified to ask him or even like look in his direction because, I mean, like he responded. His response was so pithy and so spot on that like people in the Senate were laughing at her. I mean.
Yeah, my favorite part about it though is she says to him, you know, what qualifies you to be an expert on climate change? And he says, well, I'm a philosopher, right? And she says, I wish I had the audio clip loaded up. I should have. But anyway, she goes, a philosopher. I don't think that you can tell me or a philosopher knows any more than, and I'm just kind of paraphrasing, any more than I would or these people here in front of you know about climate change. So I'm just going to go to the Reverend. Hey, Reverend, how is there, what do you feel about, yeah. What are your thoughts on climate change? Like he knows any better, you know? So that made me laugh.
Essentially she's applying to these, there are actually two religious leaders at the Senate hearing about climate change, and she's actually applying to them for, you know, I mean, religion is largely philosophical. It's a code of ethics and morality. there are differences in the field, but essentially that's what people, when people say, you know, people need morality. What they're saying essentially is that's not untrue, but you know, they're saying, you know, people need religion because they need morality. No, you can have morality without religion. But, you know, so she's applying to these religious leaders for philosophy. And, you know, in the same breath, she's saying that a philosopher has no business, you know, informing the Senate. And, you know, his word, far and away. You know, there's so much to be said there. They were asking technical details about quote unquote climate change, and you know, there wasn't one technical expert there.
Right. It's like, here's a guy, he wrote a book about the morality of fossil fuels, the moral case for fossil fuels. You know, the Center for Industrial Progress, it's all, his whole world is revolved around this and thinking about it and researching and all this. And just to obviously she never read the book. She should read the book, if she can read even. But obviously... You know,
tell us how you really feel, Corey. Don't hold back.
Yeah,
you're
going
my friend here.
I know. It just makes me crazy the way that she just was so smug, and she just needed a good punch in the face, if you ask me. So.
Well, she got a metaphorical one for sure.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. That's we'll go with that for now. Next time, hopefully it'll be a physical one by a woman, not by a man. I don't believe in that kind of thing. Maybe Megan, you could go out there if you could get away with it anyway.
That would involve me touching her, and I'm just not. Oof. No. Oof. No.
Well, she's half fake. She's probably half fake. She's like the exact opposite of a Terminator or something, where it's like she's more machine or more like plastic or silicone or whatever it is now.
That's a terrifying thought.
Yeah. So anyway, a couple of things I want to do, the housekeeping things right away, get those out of the way. If you have a question, comment, want to call in, and if you have a question, call us at 516-387-1224. If you have a question or you want to interject in any way, press 1. Otherwise, you can just call the number and listen to the show without commenting or anything like that. So again, 516-387-1224. We're on the Stitcher and TuneIn radio apps. You can download those onto your smartphones if you have one. And follow us on Blog Talk. Just go to Blog Talk, and that's where you're at listening to us right now, probably. And you can follow us there by clicking the follow button to the top right hand or left hand, one of the corners. You can click on that, and you'll be able to be following us, and you'll get notified when we have shows coming up as well. It was funny. I was just mentioning to you, Meg, before the show that, you know, Jonathan Honig said that he would listen to the show, and thank you very much. And hopefully you're catching this on the replay, at least, Jonathan, and thank you. He asked if we were on iTunes, and I'm like, I know, and I keep saying it.
The first person to do so.
Yeah, I don't know what the problem is. I guess maybe I'll just focus and get that taken care of. I think I don't have a I don't have an iPhone, or I don't have, you know, I think it's easier. I don't know. Maybe it's easier if you have an iPhone to get on iTunes, your podcast on there. I don't know. I messed around with it one day, but I kind of gave up, but whatever. I'll get it there eventually. So that's great. Anyway.
Go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, you had a thought. Go.
Oh, so, I mean, part of the whole motivation for doing the special Valentine's Day episode was to start a new bit. And me being me, I totally forgot to mention what that new bit was. So I don't know if our listeners will find this completely cheesy. I mean, that's not out of the realm of possibility. But Corey and I were thinking – we're thinking about having a section where you can set, you know, like, you know, the whole thing about the podcast last time and in general about In the Closet Objectivist is talking about positive values. So we were thinking, and you guys will have to let us know what you think of this. Listeners could send in little, I don't know, shout out sounds kind of silly, but, you know, just values that they wanted us to air, you know, so we could, if there's some value you want us to celebrate, you can send in, whatever it is. We do read them. So, you know, like, we're not going to dedicate a value, you know, like, a moment to see more butts. Yes. We do actually read them, but yes. Yeah, the risk of sounding a lot like Casey Kasem. We would love to share your positive values.
Yeah, definitely. And you can actually on Facebook, I created a page, In the Closet Objectivist. If you search that, you can join our little cozy group atmosphere, and there you can give us some ideas, thoughts, feedback on the shows too. We can have a little bit of fun there. Yeah, I think that's a good way to go. I'm on Twitter again. I hate the name. I use my name on Twitter. You could just follow. It's Baum, BAUM _ Corey, CoReY. I'm on Twitter. You can just look me up there, but I'm not on there a lot. I just go on there. I promote the show. If I go on there too long, I end up getting into an argument and it gets kind of ugly. So it's not quite like Facebook where I can kind of, I've been better at censoring myself, but on Twitter, it's madness. So anyway, there you go. I know Meg's on Twitter as well. So yeah, definitely get in touch with us. If you have any thoughts on Meg's idea there, you know, we can talk to you about that. So bring it up. Cool. So today, I'm sorry, one other thing. If you call in and you do want to comment or have a question, we're going to ask you for a fake news headline. This is a headline that you can wish were true, want to be true, whatever, totally made up, because that's our shtick here. And then if
we love fake news.
We love fake news, we do. You know, it's just it's so funny, and you can just label it. Oh, that's fake news, I'm done. That's fake news, I'm done. I'm not going any further. It's just total. You could just it's just madness, right? So you could just write anything out. Anyway, and then if you are into objectivism or if you've heard about objectivism, please let us know where you first heard of it, whether it was a book, a lecture, a friend told you. If you haven't heard of objectivism, that's fine too. We're not saying that that's a requirement, but if you have heard of it, we're just curious. We look for background origin stories on people that that have been into objectivism and or are into objectivism, that kind of thing. So
yeah, I love hearing objectivist superhero origin stories. Fun.
Yeah, maybe we should reach out to Bosch and see if he can draw us a comic book, like objectivism origins, like X-Men origins.
Oh, I love it. I'm so glad you thought of that. I wish I had thought of it. That's pretty brilliant.
Half the stuff that it just comes to me as I'm talking to you. So it's a funny thing is I was writing my notes up for today, and I think I do better on the fly sometimes. You know what I mean? When things just kind of, when we're talking and it's a little less organized and it's kind of, it could be chaotic, but I don't know. It's just sometimes and then there's other times when I just have a brain fart and I forget everything and, you know, I need some sort of note. So.
And then, like, you've got a lot of things going on. That never happens.
No. Yeah, the funny thing, too, is, so Yaron's, I'm going to go back to Yaron, and you guys might be listening. You don't know. Yaron Brook, he does a podcast.
Hi.
He's great, and you should be listening to his show as well, Yaron Brook. Blog Talk Radio has a show. He was talking about selfishness today, but there was something interesting. I'll bring up the rest of this later, but I just wanted to point out, he was like, if you have to be, if you want, it's one of the things he kind of threw away, it was an aside, he's like, if you really want to be good, like say, for example, you want to be a really good piano player, you got to really practice and you got to, if you're bad at a certain part of piano playing, maybe you just need to focus on that piano, that particular part, and you keep doing it and keep doing it. And yeah, you're going to be bad, but you keep doing it because it's in your selfishness, it's in your self-interest to get good. You want to be good at something you're passionate about. And he gets me so, like, when he talks like that, I get so motivated. And then I look over and see my guitar, my poor guitar has been sitting there unplayed, unstrummed. Is the word I want to say, unstrummed for at least a month or two. And I'm like, damn you. Now I got to go over there after this show and I got to poke away a little bit at it.
It might be a little bit hard on yourself. I mean, it's not like you have a day job and a family and a podcast and you're such a slacker, Corey.
I know. I know. It's just one of those things, but it's just things that come to you as I was listening to his things that came to me, I should say. So yeah, anyway, I want to get to the topic of the day is we're talking about entertainment today. And again, what we've been watching, listening to, reading, whatever, etc, etc, etc. And, I have a few things, in between, working, getting supper on the table and so forth, and doing the usual errands. There are some things I do get to. The first thing I wanted to mention, and this was because of Yaron's show bringing this up, is a show called Fauda on Netflix. And I actually powered right through that. I just one after the other. A fantastic, fantastic show. And it's like it grabs you, and it does, it's one of those – you got to get to the next one. It's a binge watch, total binge watch. And there's 12 episodes. And I'm not going to give away a lot, but it is about, it's an Israeli, is it Arabic? What's the language? Sorry, if I, it's between Israel and Palestine, so it's a conflict there. It's about Israeli Defense Forces. It's about a Defense Forces unit where one of the agents goes after a Palestinian militant who they thought was dead. And there are subtitles, but it's no problem getting through it. A lot of great action, and it's I don't know if it's based on anything true, but, you know, obviously, you know, suicide bombings and things like that happen. So, I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility that, you know, this could very well be based off of a true story. Now, I don't think it says it anywhere in there, but it makes it, to me, would be like if they said this was based on a true story, you'd be like, oh, yeah, for sure, right? Because you hear about this in the news all the time if you pay attention to the news. And over in foreign affairs in particular, you'll see stories like this over there all the time. So anyway, it's a really good show. Recommended highly. Very binge-worthy. Netflix and chill, I hear, is the new thing the kids are saying. But I think that they're meaning a different thing than what I mean, which is I just watch the show. I don't chill the way the kids chill. So.
It's none of our business, you know, whatever.
If I tried to Netflix and chill, I would throw my back out. So I can only do one thing at a time. One thing at a time. It's either Netflix or chill. You can't have it both ways. You know, when you get to be middle-aged, it just can't happen. So, okie dokie. So, hey, before I get into anything else, do you have a recommendation on anything you've been watching or reading or any of that?
You know, less at the risk of becoming even more of an, you know, walking advertisement for Audible. So I bring this up because for, you know, science is probably like a lot of other things where it's, you know, 1% of inspiration and 99% perspiration. My lab, you do a lot of perspiring. So attractive. You know, so like, there's a lot of things where I'm just frantically trying to get these assays run, and a good way to kind of, you know, strangely enough, sometimes they come to work tired. So a way to kind of keep me alert and keep a good pace on my work.
Oh, hey,
Meg,
real quick. I'm sorry to break your train. I just want to mention there is a caller on hold right now or on the line, area code 847. If you have a question, you got to press 1. Otherwise, I'm just going to assume that you're listening to the show and you just want to listen to it on your phone. So just letting you know. Go ahead, Meg. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. No, I have totally fallen into that trap. One time I called your own Brooke's show, and there's no prompt when you call into Blog Talk to say, hey, if you want to ask a question, press 1. You know what I mean? Like, you know, there's no prompt. So I just kind of, like, sat on the phone like an idiot for 5 minutes. Before I was like, maybe I should try this pressing 1 thing.
So
anyway, yeah, if you want to listen, please feel free. Anyway,
I'm just glad you're listening. So go ahead.
Yeah, welcome. Right. So for years, I've always loved audiobooks, especially, you know, for this reason. I love to listen to them while I'm working. So for years, I've wanted sort of the Netflix of audiobooks where you could just listen streaming ad libitum. And recently, Audible has introduced this thing called channels, which is exactly what you get to do. And, you know, they have a channel for mystery stories. And they used to have a channel for, I think they're still kind of experimenting with it. For a while at least, they had a channel of just Shakespeare and a channel of just Philip K. Dick for those who like science fiction. I think one of my favorite things they had on there, and I'm not sure if they still have it there, is Cyrano de Bergerac. And I didn't realize that this play was hugely popular among objectivists, but it was so well done and the voice acting was incredible, and the pacing and the direction. It was, and it's a beautifully written play. So that would be my recommendation. If you've never seen or read Cyrano de Bergerac, treat yourself. It's delightful. so beautiful. And I was just listening to a series of lectures by Leonard Peikoff where he's talking about 8 great plays, and Cyrano is one of them. And I love the lectures because it explains, like, how drama works. You know, this is the central conflict. This is, you know, the characters you need to dramatize the conflict. Here's the inevitable consequences of their actions and why it's so compelling. And I just, God, I'm blathering now. This is really, really interesting and fun. So, wow, I'm going to shut up now.
don't shut up. That's we need people talking on the show. Otherwise, we'll just have dead air. So we can't. I have not. Okay, so I haven't seen. I know a little bit about the play. Okay, so I know a little bit about the Cyrano de Bergerac, but I can't say I've watched it or anything. But I watched the movie with Steve Martin called Roxanne. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And that from the 80s, and I like that movie, I guess. And I know because every objectivist that I know talks about Cyrano. That everybody says it's great, and I want to get it or watch it or whatever. So it sounds like a good one, and enough people tell me that I respect that it's great. So I'm gonna go ahead and say I agree for now until I see it. We'll see.
Well, the translation that they used for the one on Audible is really good, and it. I mean, I'm sure the poetry isn't perfectly preserved, but they managed to do pretty well in English what was originally done in French. And the lines are still very lyrical, and it was written. I mean, and I guess historically, most stories and most great dramas were based on a lot of real life events, and then just the characters and the plot twists are sort of refined to give it the most drama and sort of make it the most efficient drama. It's a weird way of putting it. But anyway, so there was a real person named Cyrano de Bergerac who was a philosopher, a poet, a soldier, a true Renaissance man with a really ginormous nose. Oh, so good. Oh, it gives me chills just thinking about it. I can't wait for you to have the time to see it or listen to it or read it, because I think you'll be very well rewarded.
I will find it. I will get to it eventually. I'm sure I will. I think that hopefully. I want to get to more plays, but it's like, holy mackerel, I don't know when, I haven't had an opportunity to really check into what's going on. And right now, Minneapolis is kind of madness. People are protesting, and it's kind of worries me to bring, I want to stay away from Minneapolis for a little while because people are kind of going crazy. So if there's a play that comes in, so hopefully Cyrano, if you're listening, the producers of Cyrano, wait for, maybe about a year and come into town and I'll check you out then.
Or go to St. Paul.
Or go to St. Paul. St. Paul has good
Nordway,
stuff.
There you go. Apparently the Twin Cities, I think, I don't know if it's per capita. I don't think it is. I think, our piece of real estate has the most small theaters not movie theaters, play theaters any metropolitan in the United States. I haven't bothered to verify that. But, there's so much independent. Like, one year I saw A Klingon Christmas Carol. It was Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol, but it was all in Klingon. I mean, you can find so many weird, random things in theater in the Twin Cities. It's fantastic.
I tell people that I identify as a Klingon when I when I'm feeling a little frisky. I identify as a Klingon.
You just pull out one of those big wicked blades that's about as tall as you are. Keep it in the back of your car.
I practice
nerd.
That. what is it, the Star Trek 3, The Search for Spock, I practiced the line that Kirk says to get himself to trick the Klingon vessel to beam him up right before the Earth, or not the Earth, but the planet blows up in a big, you know, the lava is overtaking the planet, the fire and that. And it's like, I forgot how it goes. Schultz, toy, two. That's the to get him to trick. That's the way to say, beam me up. That's Klingon, right? For them to beam them up. Schultz, toy, two. And so I practice that in my day-to-day life when I want to, you know, identify as a Klingon. So.
Said it before. Nerd.
Exactly.
Not that I have completely outed myself or anything.
Yeah, right. Well, you wanted to do a whole show on, was it Serenity or Firefly? Is that what we were going to talk about a little bit too? Maybe not a whole show, but
I do really, really love that movie.
So now, but the series though, you were a fan of, right, too?
Yeah. I mean, I that's another thing that like I discovered through other objectivists is just how brilliantly written that show is. I mean, I think, you know, I don't know enough about production and direction and acting to have an opinion worth hearing. But from my very, very amateur viewpoint, it's all just so, so well done.
I've heard people that like it. I know people that like. I've never sat down and watched the show. I do like sci-fi. It can be a little bit too. I mean, overload. My part of it too is with sci-fi for me. If it looks cheap and cheesy, it takes me out of it. You know, like the Sci-Fi Channel. There's so many movies and shows on there that it's just like if it doesn't look, it's got to have a certain reality. I mean. It has to look real, not like just like that I could walk into it, but I need to have, it can't be cheesy special effects. And that's
or,
me.
I mean, yeah. I mean, usually cheesy special effects indicates cheesy everything else. Right. I mean, I in my old age, I don't have the patience for cliches anymore, you know, at least not in film and television. I just, you know, I mean, trite lines, and I just can't even. although, I don't feel good about admitting this. I don't like the fact that I like cheesy B-horror flicks, but I do love them.
Well, some of it is funny. It's funny. It's bad funny, right?
Yes. I love it when it's self-aware, you know, when they kind of break the fourth wall every once in a while to indicate, yes, we know just how ridiculous this is.
Yeah. If you're trying, because here's how it goes. Is if you're trying to have a real serious, if it's a good story and you're trying to actually have cohesiveness and a good intriguing plot, and you want to suck me in. It has to all be there too. Otherwise, if it's going to be really just schlock, it should be that I can handle cheesy schlock. But if it's trying to be serious and, you know, entertaining, it has to look that way too. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
If you want me to laugh,
We were talking about Star Trek, and there is. I forget which episode, but it's The Next Generation. And these aliens have set up this world to be, you know, they've actually created this world from this really poorly written fiction. I think it was some sort of mystery or something like that. But this is totally to Patrick Stewart's credit. He reads the first line. It's like, it was a dark and stormy night. And he looks pretty much directly up at the camera with just this like horrified and disgusted expression.
Yeah.
On his face.
So that can take me out of it. I don't like being taken out of a good movie because I see something that looks pokey or cheesy or something like that. Meg, you want me to put you on hold while you, okay, I don't know if you need to take a quick time out if there's an issue that Gracie needs attention to or to attend to. That's fine if you want to mute yourself. I don't feel like you need to. I'll just keep talking and yammering away until something happens.
Okay.
Yeah, so anyway, another show. I'm just going to briefly just go over this one because everybody knows it. It's everybody. And I'm going to say why I don't really like it, but I'm watching it still. And that's The Walking Dead. I love it. I mean, I loved it until maybe a season ago. I still watch it religiously. I tape it. All of that. I watch it. And I mean, I'm sure, Meg, you know this show, right? I'm assuming you do.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I'll get your thoughts on it. But here's my problem right now with it. I don't mind. You don't have to kill 1,000 zombies in every show. I that's fine. The villain.
But it's awesome if you can.
That's great. Yep. No, that's fine too. And the special effects, all that stuff, it's really good. And when they have really good episodes, they're outstanding. I mean, they're great. But it's not a show that I ever really need to watch. Like, I can just watch one episode. I never have to watch that same episode again. It's one of those shows now where I watch it because I'm kind of vested, but I never need to watch the same episode that I just saw ever again. Never again. So I just want to see where it ends, but I think it's starting to jump the shark. But here's the problem for me, in particular with that show, is the bad guy this year is he's the wrong actor, and he doesn't play it as menacing. See, I in seasons past with the governor, and that was a good villain. But this year I just am not into the villain. I can't. The actor's not right, man. Jeffrey Dean Morgan, he's great in a lot of things I've seen him in. But I when he's on the screen, it's like, oh, he doesn't scare me. I don't feel threatened. You know what I mean? He should be more.
Mm-hmm.
And again, there's good acting on that show, but I just can't get into this guy. I can't hate him enough. Even no matter what he did, spoiler alert, by bashing in heads at the beginning of the season, bashing a couple guys' heads of the heroes of our story, he bashed in those guys' heads, so I should hate him. And he's a bastard, but I can't look up the visceral hatred for him that I did with the governor. I just can't. So that's been my big beef is that guy, and I'm sorry to say, and when the shows are slow, man, they're slow. I mean, cripes almighty, they can drag on and there's nothing happening. At least have some interesting stuff to say between the characters, and like, you know, I don't mind a slow show as long as there's good, the writing is good. So that's kind of the problem too. I don't know. I mean, it's just, I'm watching it, but I don't know. I don't want to start hate watching it. You know, around like, but I do.
Well, see, that's where I mean, so Terry Goodkind is a fantasy author, and an objectivist. He's actually been to at least one OCon, I think. Yeah, so you know, you can imagine he's fairly popular among objectivists. And a while back, his Sort of Truth book series was turned into a TV show, and I feel really bad saying this, but it was 100% awful. It was somehow cheesier, and more trite and more poorly written than like Hercules and Xena combined. And you know what? I'm going to put myself on mute for a second.
Yep.
I'm so sorry to kind of like finish in between that thought. Hang on.
That's okay. I wanted to mention here too, you're on mute. Meg's on mute. So I wanted to say this, and Meg can chime in when she gets a chance. So I have to say now that I have strayed away from certain actors because I just can't take the activism. It's just, I hate to say it, but you know, cause they're, even though there might be a good show or movie that they're in, I can't watch them. I just refuse to watch them. Like Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, DiCaprio, those guys, their activism has reached a boiling point for me where I can't watch them anymore. I'm out on their stuff. I don't care how good a movie it is. I don't care how many awards it wins. And, you know, maybe that's not very objective of me, but I don't give a damn because I'm so sick and tired. And I think Hollywood needs a check as far as they need to lose a little bit of money. And I know that a lot of stuff, you know, they do lose their fair share amount of money, but I think we need to hit them in the pocketbook just to kind of make sure, you know, keep those guys in check a little bit. And I wish that more people would. I understand that there are other people that work on their shows that have no control. Like there's, you know, writers and grip guys and, you know, cameramen who may not share the same views as them. And they're just trying to make a buck too. And, you know, they're out there working and that. And so I feel for those guys, but there comes a time when, you know, the pushback, I'm tired of being pushed around, like feeling like I'm being talked down. And I don't care what they say. I could care less, but it's like, I'm not going to give them my money, you know, if they're, you know, political activism is pissing me off and they're, you know, they're just totally irrational.
Yeah, if we wanted to pay money to be insulted, we'd be in a Monty Python skit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I just...
Yeah, I mean, what I was going to say is that, okay, so with Legend the Seeker, oh. so here they've turned this beloved book series of mine into like the worst television show on the planet. And I could not stop watching. I like, this is my pathological optimism right here. Like I kept saying to myself, okay, they can turn it around. They can, yes, they've horribly abused the source material, but they can turn it around. They can make it not suck. And they so it got to the point where I do like the mustache game. Have you ever played the mustache game?
Yeah, no. Is that what do you put on a fake mustache?
Yeah, you put the fake mustache on the TV or your computer monitor, and every time someone's face lines up with the mustache, you take a drink.
You take a drink. Off topic, how did this come about? All of a sudden, everybody's doing the mustache thing. Like, at weddings, people are putting on those fake mustaches and taking pictures, and they're all over the place now, and it's like, what was the origin of that? Was that just a thing that, because I missed the boat on that.
I don't know.
What happened? What is that? Where did that come from? Is that?
I don't know. I know like years ago I was in graduate school and, you know, so we had this beautiful building. I toured it in a hard hat. It was just being finished when I matriculated. So they'd have a lot of alumni functions there, because it was so beautiful. And so one night they were, you know, staying late in lab, big surprise. There was, I think it was some sort of alumni function in the foyer, where there was like a buffet. And, you know, I was tired, I was cranky, I was hungry. So this being my graduate, you know, my particular graduate lab, there were, of course, fake mustaches in lab, you know, because reasons. So I put one on. That's all I did. I put on a fake mustache. I went downstairs. I grabbed myself a tapa, and nobody said a word. Like the most perfect disguise.
Really? Yeah. Right.
Good time.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, another thing that I wanted to mention too is coming up tomorrow, I really wanted to see this. I'm not going to be able to make it, but this is something that I saw come across my Facebook feed, oh, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago. So the Game of Thrones concert band is going to be in town tomorrow at the Xcel Energy Center in St. Paul.
No way.
I know, right? That music is great, man. It's so inspiring. To me, I don't know how really frame things if I really like them in an objectivist, like, would an objectivist like this? But to me, the theme to that show is very, like, inspiring. I think it's, you know, I think it's beautifully done, executed. It's a great theme song for a show. And they're going to be playing all the music from that show at the Xcel Energy Center tomorrow in St. Paul. And I would love to be there, but unfortunately, I am not going to be there. So, but that would be something I want to do. Did you know that this was happening?
Well, maybe they'll come back next year. No, of course, I had no idea. I barely do any Facebookery these days. That's a word I made up. Facebookery.
I think it's great. Add it to the lexicon. We need to come up with our own lexicon, maybe.
I predicted emoticons, right? You probably predicted Facebookery too.
Yeah. You know, we could come up with some of the Klingon words. We can make up Klingon words, put them in there. It'd be good. It'd be good.
I would love to hear Ayn Rand or LP define a Klingon word for us. Just
yeah. It's too bad he's not doing peacock.com anymore. I submitted a whole bunch of questions to him. But I never got through with one or anything like that. But yeah, get his thoughts on that. Yeah.
Is that all the years he did that, he never once was just like objectivism, QED. I mean, he got countless questions and never once lost his patience enough to say that.
I did actually get one email back from a guy. Programmers. I don't know who it was. Said, "Hey, Corey, that question you submitted was already answered. Go to this page and you'll see." And I think it was a Santa Claus question I had about why should I? Mm. By telling my kids there's a Santa Claus, am I being some sort of a, you know, hypocrite, or am I, you know, is this a bad thing that I'm doing by letting my kids believe? I should say that, well, whatever, believe in Santa or in the Easter Bunny and whatever and stuff like that. And he got back to me and whoever it was and said, "You can find it here." And I'm like, "Oh, cool." So that was cool. I do reference the peacock.com quite a bit though, just to go back and because it's just so insightful. That's one thing that I do. So that I guess entertainment and informational purposes, I go back to that. And ARI too, by the way, ARI campus, you guys can go there. A lot of the stuff is either very low cost, like $2 or $3 for like a lecture, or free. I mean, it's such a great resource and it's out there. It's free. It's available. Everybody should be on it. Everybody should be looking into the courses, taking the courses, studying. I mean, you can do that all day, every day for, how many hours are cataloged, but great resources out there too, to learn more about objectivism. If you want it, you can get it. So as far as what I'm doing too, we're planning a trip this year, to San Francisco, Meg. What do you think?
Wow. Yeah. No, it's been years since I've been there. I remember the food being really good.
The hippies though.
Sorry, I'm mentally recalling.
I don't want to have to deal with homeless people, like, you know, walking over them. By the way, Meg, I think I lost you. I don't know if you're still there, if you can hear me. I can't hear you, or maybe you lost me. Who knows? But that is a situation. You know, San Francisco is somewhere I've always wanted to go. I want to do the Alcatraz thing. You know, I want to go to other places. Meg just texted me. Oh, she's still here, but I can't hear you. So, Meg, I think you might need to call. There you. I hear you now. Good. You're back.
Okay. Perfect.
So I was going to just say, I was on San Francisco, and you know, we want to see. Obviously, I'm worried a little bit about the homeless situation or whatever. I don't want to get accosted out there, but I do want to see like the usual stuff, Alcatraz, Golden Gate. We've never been there. I've never been there. You know, it should be fun. My issue now, though, is I just found out last week that my company is being sold or has been sold and will take effect in June. And I don't know what kind of I'm not worried. I don't think I'll get laid off, but you never know with these companies getting bought, you know, and sold. They tell me that everything is fine, that we're just transitioning everyone over to the new the new company. It's Guaranteed Rate is the new mortgage company that's taken us over. And they say everything's going to stay the same, but you never know. So anyway, I'm planning this trip. We have the budget for it, everything set aside, but it's like, how much do we really want to commit right now? You know, see what the thing, you know, what the situation is. But I think I'm fine. It's just something that happened pretty recently. So I still want to go out there.
Wow.
And we're still going to go out there. I know, right? It seems like things like this happen, especially in mortgage. You know, people, there's layoffs in mortgage a lot, and just depending on the amount of volume and stuff like that. But I am not too concerned. But again, it's there. It's always in the back of your mind when you get up.
Hey, maybe you'll get a raise.
Maybe. Hey, that would be great, huh? I just want to, you know, if as long as I just get transferred over fine and I don't have to worry about anything on my end, and I'll just take what I have, and any extra is much appreciated, but I'll just take a job, thank you, and we'll be happy with that. So anyway, I had to bring it up because it's like I wanted to mention to you and mention to the audience that I was going to be going out there, and if hopefully we have listeners out there that could tell me what to look for, where to stay, what a good place is to eat. Well, you can tell me too, Meg, I'm sure. But
Gosh, like I said, it's been about a million years, so my recollection is pretty vague.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah.
You can go to Redwood Forest, which is beautiful.
Yeah. Well, when I was looking at the map of it, you know, I noticed across, across the way there is the Berkeley campus. So I'm like, oh boy. Stay away from that. Huh?
Yeah.
Don't mention anything about objectivism. Well, maybe objectivism over there. I don't know. You got to be very careful, though. Huh? You might get maced or something. So.
Yeah. I've known several graduates from Cal, and some of them are crazy conservative and some of them are crazy liberal. There are actually a few who are sane, and that is really to their credit, because I don't know how. I mean, if you graduate in 4 years, that's a long time to preserve your sanity. I've been on Cal campus, and I just, wow, it's not like anywhere else. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah. So in addition, so getting kind of moving away from the trip thing and going back into our topic. So I've been listening to Audible, Atlas Shrugged, and pretty much, you know, I'm to the point where I shouldn't give too much away, but Cheryl and Jim are having their issues, right? How much of this should I get away? I shouldn't give away anything, right? I mean, I shouldn't say too much about what happens, because it's pretty unexpected, I think, what happens. I didn't see it coming, so I shouldn't say. Okay, but I did have a question that I posed to you earlier in the week, because I wanted you to think about this, because it's an interesting one I saw this question on my Facebook feed. Totally not me, but it was such a good question that I just wanted to get your thoughts. And if anybody else has thoughts on it, let me know. So anyway, in Atlas Shrugged, okay, there's going to be spoilers. So if you don't want me to spoil anything, you probably should just stop listening for, I don't know, maybe the rest of the show.
Just put us on mute and try to find Cyrano de Bergerac or Atlas Shrugged on Audible.
Yeah. So, okay, so this, because it's such a, it was so interesting. So anyway, in Atlas Shrugged, Dagny crashes into the Gulch, and she falls immediately in pure and unmatched love with Galt, where she basically forgets Hank Reardon, whom she battled the world for years with, having him as her only respite, where she decides to be with Francisco, her first love, and her love for many years would be a betrayal to her value system. Does that bother you that Dagny fell so quickly in love with Galt, having just first saw him, like immediate love, just for and Francisco.
No, it doesn't for a couple of reasons, and one of them is that keep in mind, like pretty much as soon as you meet Dagny, you learn that she's just so extraordinary, right? Especially at the time when the book is written, it was unheard of for a woman to run any kind of, you know, transcontinental business, let alone something sort of grease monkeyish like a train, you know, like a railroad. So, you know, early on, the book talks about just how desperate she was for a friend or an adversary who was her equal, you know, someone where she could really challenge herself and prove her best. Even if someone else won out, it was nice to like meet someone with a mind as unique and powerful as her own. I mean, just imagine how lonely she is to go her whole life with maybe knowing one person like that, and that's Francisco. But like, Francisco has for 10 years betrayed everything she values in him. Like, imagine that. Your first love and the only bright spot of brilliance in your life has become a worthless playboy. I mean, just imagine like the level of betrayal there. For 10 years, like that's a lot. I mean, it's hard to kind of carry a torch after all of that. So when she meets Hank, it's a huge relief, you know, finally, there's a mind like mine. And yet, he's horribly conflicted. Hank doesn't have the knowledge that Dagny does, and he says terrible things to her. Now, she realizes that this is not out of malevolence. There's just a real misinformation there. But it's still, I mean, she knew right away that he wasn't the one. And there's even a passage where she talks, you know, she's thinking about, you know, the one, and there's this person at the end of the tracks, right? Like the person she's been longing to meet her whole life. And it wasn't Francisco and it wasn't Hank. It's not that these men aren't heroic, but they're not the one. And she knew that. So, you know, I mean, she has a very clear idea of what this person is like. So it's, you know, it makes sense that she could identify the exact sense of life she was looking for as soon as she saw it. Now, I mean, I don't know if you'd call it love at first sight, because it's not like they see each other and they're like, oh, yeah, let's head up to my bedroom. No. There's definitely a courtship there, and one unique to these really amazing characters. But... I mean, I it's not like she just completely forgot about Hank. Indeed, even after she kind of breaks up with Hank, they're still like the only ones supporting each other as the entire, I mean, like if you could imagine the rug being pulled out from under you in every direction, that's what it's like for Hank and Dagny pretty much the whole book. And it's a long book.
Right.
You know, it's amazing that they managed to keep going with just each other for support, because, you know, it's awful the things that happen that they have to endure.
Let me play devil's advocate for just a minute. So let's say that the inventor of the in Star Trek there's warp drive. Let's say Dagny all of a sudden she's with Galt and she meets the inventor of the warp drive. Is she going to leave Galt for the inventor of the warp drive? Because that's even more of an accomplishment, so to speak. Is that being reasonable, or is that being, is she going to trade up?
I mean, it's a similar way of saying, like, is she trading up for the highest dollar value? And that's not the case. I mean, you know, Francisco's given up all of his wealth. Galt was never wealthy. It is noteworthy that Galt's not only a genius in physics, that he's come up with this invention that could change the world radically. But he's also a genius in philosophy, and you see that in his speech, right? I mean, this is something completely unheard of and fully valid and sound. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, it's such a triumph of literature and philosophy. Those facts aren't irrelevant, but, one of the first things she thinks about when she sees Galt's face is that it was innocent of pain, right? And it's not that this man hasn't endured tragedy. He has, but he regards it as completely beside the point of life, you know, in a way that even Hank and Francisco aren't that integrated in a flourishing life, eudaimonia type philosophy. I mean, that's really the attraction there, is that is the sense of life that is completely unique. So no, I think if you know, she met the inventor of warp drive, you know, she'd be awed. She'd probably find this person heroic. But I don't think she'd trade up.
So you think there's just, yeah, their values lined up, you know, perfectly, Galt and Dagny, in a way that it's not just about the accomplishment or the, I mean, it's about that, but it's about also their values lining up perfectly. I don't know, maybe that kind of thing. It's just an interesting question. It's one that when I saw it, I'm like, wow, that is kind of interesting. And I mean, not kind of, it is an interesting thing to this is, it comes from a debate group that I'm in on Facebook, and these guys are really, they play rough, but they bring up really good, they bring up interesting topics to talk about. So it's good. That's a great analysis by you. I didn't really know how to answer it. So I didn't answer the question. I just kind of followed the thread and saw it through. And I think part of it is, in the real life, you know, when you love someone for as long as you did, as long as you loved Hank Reardon, you know, it doesn't work that way in real life. The point that I was getting from that thread, a lot of people were saying that in the real world, you know, when you love someone like a Hank Reardon, they were looking at it as she was trading up, and that, you know, you stay with Hank Reardon because you have this, you know, same value system with him and love with him, and you wouldn't necessarily just fall immediately in love with John Galt. It doesn't work like that in real life. So I don't know.
Yeah, I'm surprised to hear that for a couple of reasons. One is, like, you know, after the first time they make love, Hank calls her a whore. Now, his words are not agreeing with his implicit philosophy, but they do agree with his explicit philosophy. I mean, he's really conflicted. And it's hard for Dagny to live with that. I mean, she decides that his values far outweigh this conflict, but it's hard to hear, especially if it's after the first time you've been in love. So, and the other thing is, I think she knew right away that he wasn't the one. It doesn't mean that she doesn't love him, and love him passionately, but I think that alone sort of undercuts the idea that, you know, she's going to stick with Hank no matter what. The other thing is that, like, in the real world, you know, you can love someone and know that they're not right for you. You know, it doesn't mean you don't wish them well and care deeply for them, but it would be dishonest to to make them think that it was going to work when it just, I mean, that's really hard, right? Like, sometimes people think that if they just try a little bit harder, they can make it work, and they just can't. It's just not, you know, the puzzle pieces just don't fit. And it's better to let them know up front, like, I mean, it is not for lack of effort or value on your part. These pieces just don't fit. Rather than torture them into thinking that they just need to double down on their effort a little bit.
Right. Yeah, no, interesting thought. I knew that this would be a question when I threw it out to you. I like, think about this, and I knew you'd be able to come up with, I knew that would be interesting to you. So that's why
when you read those parts, was it troubling to you? I mean,
I didn't even think about it that way, to be honest with you. When I read Atlas, and when it, you know, I listened to it, I'm listening to it now. I am already past that part, but the thought never occurred to me. Right. This was her, Galt was the highest value. She had been searching for the inventor of the motor, and it would make sense that she, the accomplishment of that motor, you know, would be like someone that she would potentially fall in love with in the end. But it's not something I struggled with. See, that's part of it is, you know, maybe I haven't dissected Atlas like, you know, like I should. But I just take it as, you know, I just took it as, you know, that was her. She was in love. You can be in love with multiple people throughout your life. And it just so happened that Galt captured her heart more. Maybe she should have, I don't know what more she could have done to let Hank know, hey, you know, I'm in love with Galt, and but in the story, what was my train of thought on this? I totally lost my train of thought.
Is it all right if I jump in? I was just thinking about how, it's just such great drama, right? Like, when she's chasing Quentin Daniels and the mystery person in the plane, she has two thoughts, right? That she wants to find the inventor of the motor, you know, this person she's admired since she discovered the motor. I mean, like, you know, she's totally, completely in love with the inventor of the motor, and she wants to kill the destroyer, right? This person who is, like, pulling the rug of her world out from under her in every direction, right? Like he's taking away everything she needs, right? And, I mean, like, you know, it's lonely for someone as brilliant and unique as Dagny in a sane world, right, where there are other geniuses. But imagine the person, like, there's one person who's taking away all of the geniuses. Just
right.
How desolate her world is. And then to, like, take away her work piece by piece, like, the one thing she has left in this world, to take that away piece by piece. I mean, it totally makes sense why she would hate this person. He's destroying the world. Like, it's such amazing drama. They're the same person, right? Like, and it just speaks to how like, the value John Galt brings, that she's so totally in love with him that despite everything he's doing to take her world away, she's still in love with him, right? Not even despite of what he's doing, but because of what he's doing. I mean, that's just, like, I mean, that's just such a brilliant drama.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I guess I didn't get too heavy into that. It didn't really even occur to me. It's just she met John Galt, and they fell in love. And it's not like Hank and her got married, you know, or anything like that. I mean, it was a heavy relationship. They were, Hank left Lillian, and but for, you know, for Dagny and but still, you know, she met Galt, and it's kind of like, but I wonder, because if you think back, you know, remember when Hank hit Francisco, he punched Francisco for, you know, basically sleeping with Dagny, and he got upset about that, and he doesn't do that to Galt. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know how to really think about that, but it's just interesting. I don't have my thoughts together completely on it, I guess. But it's just interesting.
Yeah, well, that scene where Francisco just, it's just a brilliant love triangle, right? Like, Francisco's in love with Dagny but can't tell her. Hank's in love with Dagny. You know, she's sleeping with one and did sleep with the other. I mean, like, you know, and they just, like, all of that comes out in the same scene, right? And
right.
Like,
yeah.
Hank and Francisco love each other as, you know, like, it's a bromance. Like, I mean, they're
yeah.
There's such mutual admiration there. They're both geniuses in their field. It's worse than, like, the Guinevere, Lancelot, Arthur triangle. I mean, everyone loves everyone else, and yet they seem to be at complete cross purposes. I mean, oh, the drama just... I think I actually, like, broke out into a sweat when I was reading that scene.
Yeah, it is one of those scenes. Yeah, definitely. When it's one of those scenes when you're like, oh, boy, something's going to happen here, you know? I mean, someone's going to... You know, there could be some real bad shit that goes down here. And so, yeah, it's a little tense. There's a few, obviously, you know, a few tense scenes to come from that, you know, not just that, but also, well, I won't spoil too much, but down the road, there's more tense scenes. That's to say that. But,
Ayn Rand does not let up. Like, the worst possible thing that could happen at the worst possible moment happens every single scene. I mean, imagine, like, Hank just divorced Lillian. I mean, he's finally free of this vampire, and that's when Dagny leaves and apparently dies. I mean, the moment, the instant he's free of 10 years of tortured marriage and can be with the person he actually loves, she's gone.
Yeah. So that's, you know, yeah, exactly. And then there you go. You know, and then she finds Galt and they fall in love, but you don't see, maybe I'm misremembering or forgetting, but you don't see the reaction from Reardon to Galt that way. Why does Reardon defer? Maybe that's the wrong word, but why doesn't Reardon react the same way to Galt?
Well, the one thing I think he doesn't know Galt. He knows Francisco, and he feels the way Dagny does for most of the book, that Francisco is betraying his own genius. You know, he's throwing his life away, and that's hard to watch when you care so much about a person. I think that's really why Hank is so angry. I mean, he doesn't know anything about John. All he knows when he figures out that Dagny has met the love of her life is that, I mean, this person has got to be pretty extraordinary. And I think he regrets the stuff Francisco put Dagny through a lot. He had good reasons to do it, but I think that's part of the reason Hank was so upset with Francisco is for putting Dagny through these 10 years of torture. She really needed a kindred spirit. There's a sense in which John Galt does worse, but, when Dagny meets him, it's like, oh, to joy. You know what I mean? It's just this hallelujah moment. And I think Hank recognizes what what that's done for Dagny. And you know, when someone imbues someone you love with that much joy, you can't help but feel gratitude. So I think that's, I mean, you bring up an interesting point that I hadn't really thought about before. Like, why is Hank's reaction to Galt different than to Francisco? And I think part of it is just that, like, he's learned some stuff in between those two scenes. That's really helped him. But I think the context is a little different too.
Right. Cool. Well, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It's something to keep thinking about, I think, a little bit. It's not something that, it's like studying, you know, you got to study more Atlas Shrugged and that kind of thing. So I don't know. But anyway, yeah. Hopefully they come up with a better movie of that novel to imbue some of those scenes. You know, I haven't seen the Atlas Shrugged movies, but, you know, because they're awful, I hear, and I just won't do it. But if they come up with a good mini series or something someday, maybe a Netflix miniseries.
I was listening. So Ankar Gate, he's a philosopher at the Ayn Rand Institute, and I think everything that comes out of his mouth is gold. He taught some of my classes at the Objectivist Academic Center. He has these series of lectures called Atlas Shrugged Chapter by Chapter. And the first thing he does with each chapter is talk about the meaning of the title, and just how the title is dramatized over the chapter, and like visuals that I hadn't even picked up on. So for example, one of the first chapters is called The Top and the Bottom. And I think it starts out with Jin Taggart and his cronies. They're at the top of a building, but it's in this bar that looks like a cellar, and they're doing their machinations to destroy a railroad. So they should be on the bottom, and they're on the top. And then you see Eddie Willers, a hardworking, genuine kind of guy, talking to an unknown worker, who you will later discover really should be on the top, and yet they're in the basement in a cafeteria. They're on the bottom. And then there's Dagny. I mean, like, I never would have realized this had Ankar not made it explicit.
And I just
thought to myself, man, each chapter should be like a TV episode, you know? I mean, it'd be really, really hard, especially, there's a lot of internal soliloquy, so it'd be hard to make that visual. But I think it'd be, like, well done. I think it'd be so worth it.
Yeah, no kidding. I was actually thinking that too, about Willers for a moment. So I hope I'm still spoiling it because I gotta. So Willers dies, right? It's not explicitly shown, but he dies because he doesn't get taken. And I was kind of, That was brought up to me, and it took me a minute because I didn't want to think that, but then I had to think that because you're based on the way that the shape of the world was when they left, it's obvious, and he died. So I'm like, I thought to myself, would there be any way that he could have been accepted to the Gulch? And I can't think of it. So I struggled with that because I'm like, he's a good guy. He's great. He wants to, you know, he's a champion of Dagny. But he's not in that group. He's not.
In the Gulch, there are people who are, I mean, there was one person who was a truck driver, and, you know, he's not a great industrialist, but he doesn't accept the morality of the outside world. He rejects it. And you know, in the outside world, he has no chance to rise. So I think he's not a great industrialist or a great thinker, but he totally would have been accepted into the Gulch. It's just that in the first chapter, he talks about how he's the serf of Tiger Transcontinental. I mean, Dagny leaves twice, and he still doesn't leave, and it's not because he disagrees with her choice. He's glad that she's going and freeing herself of, you know, creepy Jim Taggart. It's that,
yeah.
I mean, it's that he can't bring him. I mean, his self is just so wholly invested in Taggart Transcontinental. I mean, it's like, in a way, it's like when you have someone, a loved one, you know, is dying, right? Like, it's so hard to sit there and watch it happen, but you can dream of leaving, you know? I mean, that's really what it is for him. He just can't, I mean, Taggart Transcontinental is a loved one to him.
But let me ask you this, though. While Willers was talking to Galt in the cafeteria, I'm sorry. Galt never tried to recruit him. So, would he be accepted?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think Galt, you know, he probably saw the look on Eddie's face when Eddie talked about Dagny. I think Galt's very perceptive. I think he knows what Eddie's answer would be. Galt also, you know, needed Eddie for that inside information. But yeah, I think I am less convinced that Eddie dies in the end. He's got a lot of very powerful, very capable friends. If anyone could find Eddie and rescue him, it would be these people. Even before you had like Find My Phone apps. But I think there's more to it. I think Ayn Rand's purpose there was that, you know, in a morally bass ackwards society, could people die? And I mean, that's true in We the Living, right? Like that, you know, that is the inevitable consequence of that. Good people, I mean, it's the case with Cheryl Taggart, right? Like, good people die. And which makes, like, the vilification of heroes like Dagny and Hank and John and Francisco just all the more horrible, right? I mean, you know, without these people, could people do die? Why are they being vilified?
Yeah. I don't know. It's just interesting, I guess. It's interesting to think about. I just assume that, you know, in good people are going to die, you know, not there's going to be bad people that die, but there's going to be also good people that die. And I think that Eddie dies, and I didn't want to think that, but they don't come back at the, well, spoiler alert, at the end, you know, we can go back now. Right? Well, what happened to make him say we can go back now? Right? Like, the total destruction so they can go back and rebuild, you know? So, like, I have to think, like, yeah, probably everybody's dead. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. I think if you didn't go there, you probably were dead. So, I don't know. It's,
I don't know. I just imagine John and Dainey sort of swooping in on their super jet that John invented. And
right. Yeah. Anyway, not to be end on a down or anything, but so anyway, I kind of want to do more of an Atlas Shrugged episode. We'll see if we do that. It's possible later on. I don't want to. It would be such a long episode if we do it. I mean, we could.
Well, you know. I think honestly, it could be fodder for dozens of episodes.
Yeah, we might just broach a little bit here and there as we talk on other topics, I suppose too. But yeah. Back to the entertainment, we'll probably wrap it up pretty soon, I suppose, getting to be supper time here. So, but do you have, what other entertainment, anything else you have entertainment wise that you wanted to, recommend or let us know
God.
About?
Not really.
Yeah.
I mean, I have my books that I love. I've got, you know, shows that, I mean, I don't know. The thing is that you know, I'll usually have them on in the background. So they're not, I mean, I chose them specifically not because they're particularly involved or, yeah, I mean, I think they're well done. It's just, I mean, they're certainly not very objectivist-y. They're just kind of to, you know, when it's just me and Gracie, I like to hear adult voices talking in full sentences.
Yeah, no, that's, yeah, I'm here for you. You know, just let me know. I'll be there, you know, or call me up or
Thank
something.
Thank you. Thank you.
I know you got other buddies that you can you converse with as well. But you know, I'm always up for a good conversation as well. You know, so part of the reason
yes.
we do this show too is to talk smart. You know, and have some fun and
I do at work. I don't think it's appropriate to espouse my philosophy. It's implicit in what I do, but
right.
So there is a sense in which I'm sort of putting on a mental girdle in a lot of contexts. And, you know, it's not that I resent that, but it is such a relief when I can actually say what I'm thinking.
Exactly. Well, that's it, too. I've gotten myself in a little – not a lot, okay, not a lot, but a little bit of trouble at work by getting a little too – something happens, you know, and you bring up something that doesn't really hit the ears of non-objectivists well. And I don't want to get into specifics, but, you know, you got to, and then I'm like, I'm just kidding, you know, or whatever, just to get out of it so that I don't have anybody go to the boss and this guy, whatever. You know, I just don't want to be, not make too many waves and try to dial it back. Oh, passive aggressive. I'm being passive aggressive.
<You know. laughs>
So,
yeah, I mean, I don't think, I doubt that's true. And I hope it, I mean, I don't think I've come across that way. I don't feel like it's passive aggressive. It's just, you know, I mean, everything in context, right? And
works.
Yeah. Probably not a great place to start debating the merits of Plato versus Aristotle. Unless, you know,
right,
your
exactly.
work is philosophy.
Exactly. I do want to recommend one movie I want to see. Again, I don't go to the theater too much, but I might on this one is The Founder, the one about the Ray Kroc, the McDonald's guy. Now, I'm not. It's not like I'm a big McDonald's fan. I mean, I did have it last night, but I like business movies about the creation of the evolution of a business, a really successful business. And I think it would be a good positive movie to see. I don't know this for a fact. I know that it's got good reviews and it has actors that I don't boycott yet in it. So yeah. So, 'cause there's a lot that I do. I think you might have missed it, Meg, when I said earlier, you might have missed it because you might have been on hold or we might have gotten hung up or whatever happened. But yeah, so there's certain actors that I boycott now. Just I can't take
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, I try to, you know, I mean, a lot of people in Hollywood, I just kind of, you know, okay, Hollywood, whatever. I'm pretty
right.
sure there's just such a concentration of crazy there that eventually most succumb. You know, even if they started out perfectly sane. And so I feel for them. I really do. Yeah, some of them are just so obnoxious, though. And it really does. I mean, I don't have much of a suspension of disbelief anyway. But then I there are certain faces, they come up on screen. I'm like, I can't even. Ugh, just make them go away.
Yeah, Ben Affleck, man. It's like when he took over Batman, I'm like, now I can't watch Batman. You know? I love Batman. I love all the Batmans, you know. I mean, except now I can't watch. I'm not going to watch it because Affleck is Batman. And unless he goes away, I won't watch it again. But anyway, Bale's the best Batman anyway. And so that's it.
And
that's all there is to it. But yeah, The Founder, I want to check that out. Gracie has her thoughts and their strong opinions on Ben Affleck and Hollywood as well. Put her on the red carpet.
Yeah, I don't even hear her, but she's blowing raspberries. So, once again, very well timed, my dear.
Maybe she just wants some. Yeah, raspberry. The raspberry awards ceremony. Okay. Well, anyway, the founder, go check it out. I'm going to go check it out if I ever get a chance. And follow us on Facebook, or you can just join our group in the Closet Objectivists on Facebook. Join our group, please. Check the follow us on Blog Talk, blogtalkradio.com/closet in the Closet Objectivists. You can follow us there. Catch the replays on Stitcher and TuneIn Radio apps. And yeah, that's
yes. And send us your positive values.
Send us positive values. Join the Facebook group. You can do that. And Twitter. You can find us on Twitter. Corey Baum. Just search me, Corey Baum, or Megan Ribbons, Dr. Megan Ribbons with an ENS. And let us know what you're thinking. Let us know what your thoughts are on the show, future shows, and positive values, contributions, what Meg said. So I'm going to get going on supper, Meg. Let's talk. Oh, next week we're going to be talking about education, I think. Unless we go on to something else, we'll kind of get together on it. But I think education is an interesting topic to me and Meg, and it's an important one. And hopefully we provide a good service on that. And I want to do a good show on that. So, and hopefully everybody likes it. Yeah, sounds good. Okay. All right. Well, enjoy the rest of your Sunday, Meg. And,
Good talking to you as always.
All right. Have a good one, and cheers to reason.
Cheers to reason.
In this world of nonstop news, it's important local journalists cut through the noise so you know what really matters. Hi, everyone. I'm Phil Lipoff.
And I'm Shannon Mallaire. In our community in Boston, you are the driving force behind our stories every night.
Our investigators team is constantly creating change that impacts all of us.
And NBC 10 Response Leslie Gatus is ready to fight for your retail rights.
Plus experience and accuracy, Pete Bouchard brings you the forecast like no one else.
It's your news, and we're here to tell it. NBC 10 Boston, weeknights at 6, 7, and 11.
In this world of nonstop news, it's important local journalists cut through the noise so you know what really matters. Hi, everyone. I'm Phil Lipoff.
And I'm Shannon Mallaire. In our community in Boston, you are the driving force behind our stories every night.
Our investigators team is constantly creating change that impacts all of us.
And NBC 10 Response Leslie Gatus is ready to fight for your retail rights.
Plus experience and accuracy, Pete Bouchard brings you the forecast like no one else.
It's your news, and we're here to tell it. NBC 10 Boston, weeknights at 6, 7, and 11.